Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 51 in the series, entitled On the Definition of Faith, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 3rd of Kislev, 5759.
Morning. For the sake of sequence, we will study again several lines which we have learnt last week. Perik Yudches in Tanya, Daf Chav Dalad Amud Aleph, the third line from the top. Hine Hachachma Himakar HaSeichel VaHavana. Chachma, the first faculty in the human soul, is the source of intelligence and comprehension. V'hi l'mayla me'abina, shi chachma, is higher than bina, shelchu havanas ha-seichel v'hasagasa. Bina is the faculty of understanding an idea and grasping it. V'ha-chachma, but chachma, on the other hand, hi l'mayla me'avana v'hasaga, is above comprehension and understanding. V'hi makar lahen, and chachma is the source of intelligence and comprehension of avana and asaga. V'zeh lashon chachma. This is also the meaning of the term chachma, which is a combination of two words. The term chachma contains two words. Koyach ma. The koyach of ma, which means the faculty, koyach is the faculty of the unknown, of that reality concerning which we ask, what is it? Ma, what is it? Because it's unknown. Shehu ma she'enei musag u'muvan. This is the faculty which grasps that which cannot be comprehended and understood, and it cannot as yet be grasped by the intellect. That is what chachma is. It is the faculty that grasps the ma, that which transcends the human intellect, that which is not known yet, which cannot be grasped yet by the human intellect. As we have discussed at length last week, chachma is that unique faculty in the human being which allows him to suspend his intellectual ego, thus allowing for a new concept which has previously eluded him to enter into his being. Chachma constitutes the ability of the soul to create a space within its identity, and as a result of that, becoming a receptacle to receive an idea which has been transcending her previously. Bina, on the other hand, represents havanas haseichel v'hasagasi, as he puts it, the stage in the learning process where the mind asserts itself to comprehend, assimilate, and integrate a concept. In bina, the mind is in commission. In chachma, it is in omission. It is l'mayla me'havana v'hasaga. It is the moment when man removes himself from the scene, creating an empty space in the mind where the eye is not present. Then, and only then may the truth of a concept emerge. Where does that truth come from? The big I, capital I. Everyone's I, the intellectual ego. That truth comes from either from subconscious or superconscious elements in the human dynamic, which has an infinite, never-ending wells and reservoirs of intellect, or it may come from an independent concept which exists independently outside of the human being, and man shutting off, man removing the intellectual eye from the scene, allows that concept now to overtake him, to enter into a space. Prior to him doing that, he cannot understand the new idea, because that new idea does not suit his mode of understanding. So when the person is learning a Rashi, a difficult Rashi in Gemara, for example, by way of illustration, and it's a real complex, difficult Rashi, he does not comprehend it. There are some Rashis he immediately comprehends. It suits his intellectual identity. But this Rashi does not suit his intellectual identity. He reads it once and twice and three times and four times, and he fails to comprehend what Rashi is trying to teach him. What's happening at this moment is there is friction. There's friction between my intellectual identity and Rashi's message. The parameters of my intellectual framework are not open, are not a receptacle for this message. So what has to happen is one of the two. Either you remain or Rashi remains. Either you get out of here or Rashi gets out of here. If you want to remain, that's fine. But then Rashi can't remain, because it transcends your own parameters. If you want to remain in an assertive state, in a state of yes, in a state of being, that's beautiful, that's fine. But you will not be able to comprehend something that transcends your intellectual parameters, which is this idea that Rashi is conveying. What must happen at this moment is suspension of self, self-negation, creating a space in your mind. You totally tune into the idea and you suspend everything else. You suspend all of your thoughts, you suspend your entire intellectual ego, you recognize there's a truth beyond you, and you attempt with all your power to tune into that truth, suspending everything. When you remove yourself from the scene, you created a space in your mind. Now the concept emerges, and that is that flash which the person experiences and senses that, oh, I have it. It is after that where the second stage of the learning process comes, Bina, where man asserts his mind, comes back into the space, and takes that flash of wisdom that has emerged and integrates it within his own faculties. Yeah. You're asking what happens if someone understands a certain truth and disagrees with it. It's not that when we always understand something, we must agree with it. That's fine, but in order to disagree with it, you must first understand the message that the person is attempting to say. Then you can disagree with it. But there are certain human beings who, before they already understood what the other person said, they're already disagreeing. They already know prior to him beginning to speak, they already knew that they're going to disagree with him. In Chassidus it says that's the reason why children sometimes have this natural wisdom. You know, sometimes we're astonished how smart children are. They pick up on things because they have that natural humility, that natural humbleness that allows them to take in everything. Often when we sit down, we listen to someone lecturing, talking, or even conversing, we are so opinionated, we always feel that we immediately must have an opinion concerning this person, his background, what he said is correct. Oh, I already know why he said this, and so on and so forth. And if the person is always the master of the event, he can never really learn something new in his life. Whatever he will learn will just be something that suits his previous intellectual character. In order to learn something new, we must learn the art of suspension. This is briefly in a few sentences the idea that we discussed at length in last week's class. So the Alter Rebbe continues. V'lachein mislabish ba eirin seif baruch. For this reason, the light of the Ein Sof, blessed be He, is vested, manifests itself, encloses itself in her in Chachma. The leis machshava tfisa beklal, because no thought can grasp him in any way. The faculties whose functions are intelligence and comprehension cannot serve as the receptacle for the oir, for the light and the energy of the Ein Sof. Ein Sof means the endless one. And it is the term often used in Kabbalistic and Hasidic literature to describe, so to speak, Hashem's reality. Oir Ein Sof is the energy of the endless one. That is the energy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So knowledge cannot grasp the unknowable. A reality which is defined by specific parameters lends itself to be grasped via the intellect and the thought process. But Hashem's reality transcends absolutely and unequivocally the boundaries of thought. So man's instruments of understanding, of comprehension, cannot serve as a vessel containing and expressing divine energy. All of man's faculties, beginning with Bina, are defined by being. And a being, as sophisticated, as splendid as it may be, cannot serve as an abode for divine energy, which by its very definition, or rather by its very non-definition, does not lend itself to be accessed and grasped by a being which has a certain form, a fashion, a character, identity, and so forth. But Chachma is defined by not being, or rather by being not. Therefore, Chachma is a vessel for the light of godliness. The identity of Chachma is it being identityless, if there's such a word. Chachma strips its identity from an identity, it strips itself from the self. So therefore, it is only Chachma which serves as the instrument, which serves as rather the translucent container for the transcendental energy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what the Alter Rebbe is saying. V'lachein mislabish ba eirin seif baruch. As long as the mind is occupying the space of man, godliness cannot occupy that space. A mind is a powerful tool, to be sure. But it has a character. It has an independent identity. So it cannot contain and grasp that which is beyond character, definition, and identity. That which does not lend itself to the parameters of the human character and definition. It is only in that place of our souls where there exists an empty space. That place in our souls which is empty, which is blank, which is unoccupied by our asserted identity, where the energy of the Ein Sof may dwell and express itself. V'lachein, therefore, call Yisrael, all of the Jews, afilu hanashim v'ameyaretz, all types of Jews, men, women, ameyaretz, illiterate, ignoramus Jews, hey ma'aminim b'Hashem, believe in Hashem. Since every single Jew possesses a holy consciousness consisting of the faculty of Chachma originating in the divine realms, the Jew has a place in his life where Hashem dwells and is presently manifest. So embedded in the consciousness of a Yid is a deep, real awareness of Hashem's reality. And Alter Rebbe emphasizes that this emunah is shared by all Jews alike, Kol Yisrael, no matter of their intellectual capabilities, their scholastic achievements, and so forth. One moment, let's just finish. Just one moment. So even the Amharites, even the illiterate Jew, says the Alter Rebbe, in Emunah, he has an Emunah identical to the greatest Jewish scholar. The same is true, he says, concerning, for example, Jewish women at that time. He says this example because at that time, as we know, in the prevailing culture of the era, most women and girls did not have the opportunity to receive an intense Jewish education. Perhaps one might think that this essentially created a state where the emunah of the Jewish men was different than the emunah of the Jewish women. Jewish men who had an opportunity to learn and to study and to comprehend the greatness of Hashem and the depth of Yiddishkeit and the truth of Yahadus and Torah and mitzvahs and so forth. Oh, their emunah was powerful, intense, and wavering. So the Alter Rebbe, no. So Hipzich Nishton, throughout history, the emunah of the Nashim was as intense, as powerful as the men, as unwavering, as unequivocal and absolute, maybe even more powerful. Maybe even more. One second.
The word is being used to be modern, what emunah is. We believe.
Exactly. What does it mean? What does emunah believe? So the Alter Rebbe explains this fact, this phenomenon, she'emunah l'mayla min ha'das v'ha'saga. Because faith is beyond understanding and comprehension. Ki pesi yamin l'chol davar v'arum yavin v'gaymer. The pasuk in Mishle, Perik Yudalit says, "Pesi yamin lechol davar va'arum yavin la'ashurei." A fool, a pesi, believes everything, but the clever person understands it correctly. Which means, in other words, that the relationship of the person to something through emunah, through faith, has nothing to do with the mind. On the contrary, it is precisely a fool who lacks intellect, who lacks a developed mind. And as a result of that, he believes things. The awareness of something that comes through faith is not created by the mind. So when we talk about emunah, it's not an awareness that is created, that is fashioned, that is formed by the das. On the contrary, pesiyam l'chaldavah, a fool who lacks intellectual sophistication and development, he believes everything. An arum, a clever person, understands it. Zog der Alter Rebbe, ulega beyakadosh baruch hu. But in relation to the Almighty who is beyond intelligence and knowledge, and no thought can in any way comprehend him at all. All men are like fools before him. If we would be dealing with an object, with a reality that lends itself to be comprehended, assimilated and integrated by faculties, by the human comprehensive fact, by the human faculties of understanding, then there is the major difference between a clever person, between the arum and the pasi, the fool. One uses his intellectual faculties, his cognitive powers, to discriminate, to analyze, to embrace or to reject, to agree or to disagree, to define and so forth. The fool, on the other hand, as a result of his inability or his laziness or whatever, does not use his intellectual faculties, he relies on faith. So here there is the difference between the pasi and the chacham, between the pasi and the arum, which Shlomo HaMelech describes in Mishlei. But when you're dealing l'gabei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Alter Rebbe says, which no seichel, no mind can comprehend his reality which is undefined, which is beyond character, which is formless in any form or fashion, does not lend itself to be accessed via the mind, which has a specific type of character and identity. So every single human being, no matter as sophisticated, as aloof, as mature, and as wise as he may be, is a pesi, is a fool in the sense that he cannot use his intellectual faculties to access it, to know it, to grasp it. And thus the only tool that can grasp him is emunah. Kediksiv, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, Perik Ayin Gimel. Vani ba'ar v'loy eda, behemais hayisimach, vani tamidimach v'goymer. I am foolish and ignorant. I am as a behemoth, as a beast before you, and I am constantly with you. In Tehillim, in this Perek, Ayin Gimel, the psalmist is lamenting the prosperity of the wicked, the suffering of the righteous, of the tzaddikim, and he states that he is absolutely ignorant of the rationale behind the ways Hashem runs the world. Ani bar v'loyeda, the Metzudas explains, a bar is a shaita, v'sechel, is an imbecile, is a total fool. I'm a bar and I know nothing. Beheime sayisi imach, I'm like a beheime in my ignorance. The next pasuk he continues, v'ani tamid imach achasta b'yad yamini. I am always with you, you hold on to my right arm. And as the Mefarshim explained, that essentially what the psalmist is saying, that despite the fact that I am ignorant, that I am like a behemoth, that everything that is happening in this world seems absolutely wrong and evil to me, nevertheless, I always remained with you. Ani tamid imach, my faith and awe from you have not withered, have not faded away. So the literal interpretation of this pasuk is that despite the fact that I am a bar, that I am a behemoth, despite the fact that I'm totally ignorant, estranged, and alienated from your ways, your methods of running the world, Hashem, I know absolutely nothing about you. I'm like a pure behemoth. Notwithstanding this, I am still always with you. The Alter Rebbe presents here the Hasidic interpretation to this pasuk. Kilaymar, the deeper meaning in this pasuk is as follows. Shebazesh ani baru behemus ani tamidimach. Not despite the fact that I am baru behemus, I am still with you. Precisely because I am a bar, because I am a fool, because I'm like a behemoth, precisely therefore and thereby am I constantly with you. Every single thing in the world is grasped through specific instruments. In order to behold the beauty of a piece of art, one cannot use his mouth, nose, or ears, although they're beautiful instruments. One must use his eyes. God forbid, if someone lacks the ability to see, you cannot tell him, hey, listen to that beautiful piece of art, because the reality of a piece of art does not lend itself to be grasped via the ears. Conversely, if someone, God forbid, lacks the ability to hear, a deaf person, you cannot tell him, see that extraordinary, exquisite piece of music. Music is such a reality which can be accessed only via the instruments of ears. They tell the anecdote about the fisherman who was frustrated with his lifestyle and poverty, and he was determined to make his contribution to the history of civilization to be remembered for all of eternity. So he built this huge infinite net, so to speak, and he was determined once and for all he is going to reveal to the world every species of fish that exists in the seas, in the oceans, in the rivers, in the lakes, and so forth. He built this huge net. And came the big day, he lowered the net, which spread over all the seven seas, lowered it to the depth of the seas and the oceans, and then after a while lifted the net. And he came out with a declaration to the entire world. All human beings should know that there is not a fish existing underwater which is smaller than 5 inches long. People were astonished. They could not figure out what happened. What was the problem? The holes in the net were 5 inches long. When the holes in the net are 5 inches long, so what it grasps will be something that is suited to the instrument that you use to grasp it. Music can be grasped through your ears, a piece of art through your eyes, and so forth. Ultimate reality can be grasped how? Ultimate reality, the ultimate transcendental reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the method? What is the instrument that can grasp that? Self-nullification, suspension of identity, bittul, chachma shebenefesh, Hashem begins to emerge where the ego ceases to exist. As long as the ego asserts itself, as long as the ego is the receptacle, which is determining, which is analyzing, which is integrating, and so forth, it can relate to many realities. But one reality does not lend itself to the ego. Divine reality. Our reason, our faculty of reason, therefore, as developed as it may be, if it is well developed, comes to obvious conclusions that reality is greater than that which we can experience with our minds, with our senses, with our intellect. We come to realize that this reality is not a product of the mind, but rather the mind is a product of this reality. So reason may lead us very far. Reason may lead us to the door of this reality. But we need different tools to enter. These are the tools of Emunah, pure undiluted faith. What is Emunah? What is Emunah? Emunah, as the Alter Rebbe defines it here in Perikut Ches, is the ability of the Jew to experience ultimate reality, to experience Hashem. It's no mere crutch for the ignorant, as some people perceive it. Pesi Yamin! If we would be dealing with a defined reality, it is a crutch for the ignorant. If it's true, use your mind! Why are you believing something that someone is telling you if there's no basis and logic for it? And often we confuse Emunah with that. We call Emunah blind faith, a leap of faith. I'm an intelligent person, I'm going to use my mind. If you're dealing with a dover that is defined, it's only a pesi that yamalachal dover. Emunah, in this case, the Alter Rebbe says, when hakoil kipitayim etzla yizbarach, Lagabi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where everyone is similar to a fool, is not the absence of the mind. It's a skill in its own right. It's a skill, it's a power in us, which takes us to a place that even the most accomplished mind cannot approach. Yes, there is the Emunah of the fool, blind faith, based on a weak mind, on a lazy mind, whatever it may be. But there is Emunah which comes after one has traveled far with his or her mind and heart, finally reaching a threshold of reality that can only be crossed with Emunah. Emunah, in other words, is the space in the Jew. It's Chachmah Shebenefesh, in that place where Hashem reveals Himself. As a result of Hashem, of Eirens, of dwelling in a conspicuous fashion in that space, in that vacuum that exists in the Jewish soul, he has an awareness on Emunah, an awareness of Hashem's reality. Alter Rebbe is actually making also a fascinating claim here that every single Jew believes. So don't believe a Jew who tells you that he doesn't believe. Every Jew, one second, every Jew has a Emunah embedded within his or her soul. True, not necessarily we are in tune with our Chachmah Shebenefesh. Not necessarily all of us are in tune with the depth of our consciousness. It may be concealed, it may be buried. That happens very often. Of course. But he says Emunah is not an issue that I decided at a certain age, I want to cross the leap. I decided that I'm going to believe. He says it's a fact. It's a result of his very spiritual makeup and anatomy. Where he has a space in the soul, in that space is Shoyra. There is Hashem's reality dwells in as a result of that. When he tunes into that level of consciousness, there is a clear, absolute, unequivocal awareness of Hashem's reality and existence. It can often be relegated to the subconscious, huh? Yeah, to be effect, exactly. The work begins to be affected by it, to allow it to affect our lives, to bring it out to the fore. So Emunah is something that is, the Emunah of the Jew, he experiences not through his mind, he experiences through the lack of his mind, through the space that transcends the mind, through Chachmah Shebenefesh, where the mind is negated, where the mind doesn't exist. That faculty is asserted in order to experience Hashem. In order to experience a logic, Bina is asserted. What has to come out? Which faculty has to be displayed to serve as a receptacle for Hashem's reality, Chachma Shebenefesh, because that is the only reality which is realityless, so to speak, and therefore can allow for the Eir Insof. And when, since every single Jew has that faculty, so that's where Emunah comes from. That's where his deep awareness in Hashem's reality comes from.
Can you give a dogma of this, let's say, right down to the problem of it?
Is Emunah an emotional faculty? I don't think he's saying it's an emotional faculty. Because emotions are also sometimes usually more powerful than intellect. They affect us certainly in a deeper way. That's true. That's why, since you're saying, how is Chachma receptacle for it? Any intellectual faculty of man cannot do justice to that reality. But Chachma symbolizes, when you see, the metaphors we spoke before, earlier in the class and last week about Chachma being the receptacle for intellectual knowledge, there are many levels in Chachma itself. The idea of Chachma is suspension of identity. That suspension of identity has to operate and occurs on many levels. When you're learning a piece of Gemara, that must happen. Concerning even intellectual, pure intellectual logical ideas. When you're dealing with the reality of Hashem, that's true. Total intellectual suspension must occur. But Chachma is that idea of suspension. And the idea of Chachma, the occurrence of Chachma, happens on many levels and in many stages. It happens in the intellectual process. It also happens in issues that are beyond the intellectual process. If Chachma and Emunah are the same thing, Chachma is the faculty which allows for Emunah to happen. Huh? Amiyaris don't have Chachma. We're talking about Chachma Shebenefesh now. We're talking about Chachma in this context. Not Chachma, not the term Chachma which we usually... No. Not the knowledge, not information, not the data. The faculty of Chachma, the faculty of transcendence. In the ancient years, the Jews living in Eastern Europe in the 16th, 17th, and 18th century were subjected to the rule of what was known as the Pritzim. Pritzim were overlords who were given the authority over large geographical territories in Eastern Europe, Russia, Poland, and the countries around, and they exercised full authority over those locations and the inhabitants of those territories. And very often they would rent out pieces of land, inns, which were known as kretschmas, to Jews living there who they would call moshke. Moshke they were called. And the Jew would rent the inn, the kretschma, which was like a motel or an inn, and pay a monthly rent to the pirates, to the overlords, for using it. In most cases, as we know, these pritzim were anti-Semitic, were brutal, were capable of barbaric, murderous acts, and usually did not have too much of a liking to the poor Jews that lived under their rule. They tell the story that once there was a Jew who rented a kretschma from the pirates, an inn. And it was a difficult winter. There were no visitors. And he did not make the money, the income he needed, in order to pay his monthly rent. 1 month went by, he didn't pay. A second month, a third month. And the pirates, who anyway did not like him too much, became furious, began threatening him, screaming at him, abusing him. And the Jew lamented, explained to him that I don't have a penny to my name. It was a very difficult winter. The snow, the rains were very heavy. There were very few travelers. And I don't have the money to pay you. Another month went by, and another month. At the end of the year, it was already 12 months that he didn't pay. The pirates were so furious, were so angered. He took the Jew and his wife, and he threw them into a deep cave. He said, you'll stay here and rot here till you pay me the rent. these pritzim exercised full legal, so to speak, authority. No one can open their mouth. They had the full power that they were given usually from the monarchy and so forth. And the pirates let them be there. He threw them in there, and he sent every day an emissary, a messenger, one of his guards, to throw in some bread and a bottle of water that they should be able to survive. You can imagine the tragedy, indescribable tragedy, coming from the world where they were in to such a cave. They could not live. They could not function normally. But we all know that the will to live transcends all other wills. They continue to live. They continue to survive somehow, some way, in mourning, in despair. But they survived. They lived absolute darkness with no the atmosphere. There were no the most important things for human beings to live. The most important necessities did not exist there. But they continue to live. Time has its own way of dealing with things. They ultimately became accustomed to this lifestyle. Days, weeks, months, and so forth. And they created a family. They had children. And the children began growing up. And life continued. The pirates, who grew old, left in his will that every day a guard must go and throw down bread and water into that cave. One child began growing up. Another child began growing up. The children didn't know about another world. They knew about this reality. This was their only reality. But day and night, they would constantly hear from their parents about a life that was and doesn't exist anymore, about the tragedy that occurred to them at this day and this year. They would always hear their prayers, their heartfelt prayers, please, and hope that one day the family will be removed from this pit and then begin living life in a real way. The children did not know what does it mean to live life in a real way. This was life. But, obviously, when day and night you hear these types of words from your parents, it affects you. Years passed, the children grew up as well, and they created families. The original father and mother already became Zaydas and Babas, and they related to their grandchildren what happened, where they're coming from, what life is really all about, and so forth. Time came and they passed away. They passed on. Generations continued to develop. There was already no one alive who lived in the other world, who lived outside, so to speak. But the tradition, the legacy that they left was so powerful that it became so much part of the structure of their life. Day and night they would pray for the day when they will be removed from this pit and live life like normal people. 100 years passed. 200 years passed. 300 years passed. Ad shenoylad chacham echad. A wise man was born into the family who lived under the pit. And he grew up. He heard about all of the traditions. He has seen it all. He has heard it all. And he began asking questions. Can the other world be proven? Can anyone prove that there is another life beyond this cave? People were astonished. What do you mean? This is what we live with. He says, of course you live with this. People need something to believe in. They need something to hope for. He says, our forefathers, our patriarchs and matriarchs many generations ago created this illusionary, otherworldly experience to give us something to be frustrated about, to give us something to hope for, to pray for. A life without destiny is not worth living, is devoid of passion, of zealousness, of energy. So this was a beautiful fantasy they created. But they said, what do you mean? Someone comes every day, water and bread falls down. Where is this water and bread falling down from? He says, freak of nature. What's the big deal? It's just Mother Nature does a lot of interesting things. And one of the things is, bread and water falls down every single day. Nope. He turns to the people who are arguing with him. He says, have you ever seen that world? No. Has your father or mother seen that world? No. Has your Zaydor Baba seeing that world? No. So how do you know it exists? Because they said that they had a Zayd who had a Zayd who had a Zayd who had a Zayd who claimed to be there. Yashikayach, very nice. You believe it and I don't believe in it. He was a smart man, an intelligent person. He began planting doubts in the minds of his brethren and all of the family members who lived in the cave. Till the day came when they split up into two groups. The believers and the non-believers. Huh? These said, the believers said, there is another world. The non-believers said, it's false. Fake, phony. Each one had powerful proofs. These had powerful proofs that there is, and these had powerful proofs that there's not. One day, a man was passing through the cave. Was walking on top of the cave, and he heard voices of people. So in the beginning, he was somewhat bewildered, and he lowered himself. He put his ear to the ground, and he heard people talking. They sounded like human beings. He found the opening. He opens it up. He jumps down into the big pit. He's here. Men, women, and children in the cave see this person, a real person, who fell into the cave. Where are you from? He begins shouting. Who are you people? What are you doing here? What are you doing in this place? They look at him. What are we doing here? Where are you from? How did you fall in here? Where did you come from? And he began telling them, I come from a world where the sun rises every morning and sets in the evening. I come from a world which above it is a beautiful sky filled with stars. I come from a world where birds fly, where rain falls, where white snow covers the earth. I come from a world where there are people laughing, singing, dancing, talking, myriads and myriads of people. Both sides were silenced for the first time. They saw someone who has seen it, who has been there, who experienced it firsthand.